Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, May 14th. I'm Ray Graff. If you are in the market for a new home or maybe you plan on selling your property, this is the show for you. We have a real estate pro in the studio to offer helpful tips if you have a question. Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is ready to answer your questions. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll talk a little bit about the current market and interest rates and things like that and anything that you have in mind. 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. It's Real Estate Today. Alex Monticello and your calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's real estate time on the show, and we welcome our friend Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. He specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You may also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. It's V-O-X-P-O-P, all one word, at wamc.org. And the number again is 800-348-2551. If anything's on your mind, real estate related. Alex Monticello, welcome back. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
What's new?
I think we made it through the winter. I don't think we have any more snow to contend with.
Is the, I know you guys have had so much business and the inventory is so tight that you're probably busy all the time, but is it busier now? Is now the weather's warming up?
You know, this is typically the busier season,
yeah.
Which is great. It has been a relatively busy spring, but I think there's also just general uncertainty that's going on. And, If you do have options and you don't have to move this spring, I think you're pulling back a little bit.
Okay, so why would you be somewhat reticent to make that move?
Well, I think there's a couple things at play. There's interest rates have basically been sideways, slightly higher than they have been in the last 12 months. We're not touching 7%, which is where we were 12 months ago.
Yeah,
we're pretty close.
It's still, in the grand scheme of things, it's not horrible.
I know. Many people have told us, the interest rates in the 80s were much higher.
Yeah.
And, but there's a, the last 20 years, we're at historic highs for the last 20, 25 years, which, unfortunately shapes a lot of people's view of the market.
Yeah. Do you think that... some historical perspective. Do you ever try to give your clients a little historical perspective about just that topic?
Well, I think the way to look at it is, I think the bigger question is, where do you think interest rates are going over the next 1, 3, 5, 7 years? And where do you think the real estate market is going? Because if you think rates are going to come down, what's probably going to happen, at least in our market and most markets where inventory is tight, it's only going to push prices higher.
Ah.
So the advice is it might actually be a better time to buy in a higher rate market if it's a temporary spike in rates, because you might be able to get better pricing and less competition, and you can always refinance the mortgage years later, or look at an adjustable rate.
I mean, believe it or not, I don't know much about this sort of thing, but are you, as somebody who's been doing this a long time, more comfortable when that inventory is tight or when it's big and loose?
Well, I think it depends on who you're representing. It's great if you're representing a seller generally in a tight inventory market, a seller's market, because you have more leverage. You often have more selection of buyers that you can choose from in terms of the offers that are being presented to the seller. Certainly in a seller's market with low inventory, it is much, much harder if you're on the buy side. And it really, you have to think about considerations not just in terms of the price of the offer, but the terms of the offer, the financing of the offer, the financial strength of the borrower. All of that comes into play in these tight markets.
We're joined today by Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. You got a real estate question, give us a shout. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. All right. Tell me how you define the tight market. It's based on days on the market?
Yeah. So let me give you some actual data. So it's a month's supply of inventory, right? Which is the absorption rate of the inventory.
Inventory being houses that are for sale.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So the term is month supply of inventory. And right now, as of the latest data in the capital region, we have is for March of 2025. The month supply of inventory was 1.7 months, meaning at the rate at which homes are selling, it will take 1.7 months to exhaust that inventory supply. Typically, they always used to say a 6-month supply of inventory was a balanced market. 1.7 months is much further below that.
Yeah.
Nationally, to give you some perspective, nationally, as of the most recent data that we have in March, it was 3.5 months supply of inventory. So nationally, there's a more balanced market. Still not a buyer's market.
I assume that's an average. There are some places where the market is just dead, and some where it's
even tighter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how long has it been this way? Now, we've been doing shows a long time, and in the pandemic, things really got. I mean, it was crazy time. But was it like that before the world ended?
No. We have had a consistent run of several years of month supply of inventory oscillating probably between, 1 and 2 months for several years since the pandemic.
Yeah.
Prior to the pandemic, I'm thinking about, 10 years ago, we would see month supply of inventory between 3.5 and 6 months.
Wow. Okay. So more or less average.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, in 2011, 12, after the post-financial crisis, you could see month supply of inventory of 6 to 7 months in our market.
Well, I'm biased. I think that this area, this part of the country is just amazing. Do you see a time when that sort of inventory widens and goes to 3, 4, 5 months?
Well,
or is this going to be like this forever?
It's a great question. I hope we do have more inventory, but I think... I think to your point, there will always be a significant demand in our market. And I think the contributing factors that are creating such strong buyer demand in our market have to do with, one, it's still a relatively lower price market than national averages.
Hmm.
The median sale price for homes in our market was $310,000 as of the most recent data, compared to about $420,000 nationally.
Hmm.
But if you just look from a regional basis, right, you know that $310,000 is well below the regional market
right.
of, greater New York, New Jersey,
yeah.
Massachusetts. So I think for those reasons and the ability for people to flex their work a little bit, I think we see people coming from higher price markets to our relatively lower price market still in the capital region.
Alex Monticello joins us from Monticello Real Estate today, and the number is 800-348-2551. Mary writes, subject heading Southwest Florida Residential. Any thoughts on buying at this time, considering the high inventory?
So this is the second point on this, why the Northeast and the Capital Region may fare better than Southwest Florida has to do with insurance. I saw a statistic recently that said that the average homeowner's insurance in New York State was something around $2,000. It's over $10,000 in Florida.
Insurance.
Homeowners
mainly hurricane-related and things like that?
I think it's all comprehensive homeowners insurance. Obviously, hurricane insurance is a supplemental policy, I think, in Florida.
Even in Florida, it's supplemental. You'd need it.
I assume it is. I assume it's a separate policy. But the point is that insurance costs, right, I think are a driving factor for home ownership, home prices, and these larger geographic trends among where people are moving.
I was talking to somebody just today, and I forget who, but they said, we're looking at Florida, and the prices are just insane down there. And I figure that must be a function of, to some extent, the income tax situation there. It's pretty nice for a retiree. And maybe there are things like that that play into the calculus that you guys do.
Well, it's very true that the home prices, there are many parts of Florida where the home prices have had a lot of rapid appreciation.
Yeah.
But the series of hurricanes that have passed through there over the last, you know, 12 to 24 months, I think are contributing to the fact that there is now a glut of inventory. People are, I mean, I can speak just anecdotally. My parents were in St. Petersburg, Florida. They never were hit directly by the hurricane, never had any hurricane damage. The last hurricane, they had water coming up to their doorstep.
Yikes.
And they decided to sell and move.
Right.
And you know, because they saw the writing on the wall and they believed that it was only a matter of time till they were going to be hit by a hurricane directly. So I think other people are sharing in that. And I mean, I've talked with homeowners in Florida who have called, who are moving up here. And there are some people who have had regional insurance companies. They've paid their bill to a regional Florida insurance company. And after the hurricane, the insurance company goes bust and they're not even able to collect their money. You know, they did everything they were supposed to do. So I think as we see more national insurance companies pulling out of these states, it's creating a larger problem.
Our guest today is Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. You have a real estate question, feel free. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Maynard Ferguson, once again, well, we've been playing some Maynard lately, Blue Birdland here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Real Estate Today with Alex Monticello. This email from Lucian. Over the last several years, I've noticed a growing problem regarding the housing market. All we hear is we need more housing, when the real problem is hedge funds buying up housing. Then they collude with each other to drive up values as well as rents. If we build more housing with taxpayer assistance, these units will likely end up in the hands of LLCs or hedge funds. We don't have a housing crisis. We have a hedge fund crisis. All right, you're at the front line. What do you think about that, Alex Monticello?
Well, this has been documented for well over 10 years that the number of housing units that we are building nationally is not keeping pace with population growth. We are many millions of homes below the just general demographic trends and mm-hmm. population growth, which is creating, you know, a tighter supply and greater competition over a smaller pool of homes, no doubt.
All right. Number here is 800-348-2551. This is from Nelson in Bondsville. We purchased a house in the beginning of May. We feel the house wasn't appraised fairly, although we had the opportunity to get it reappraised. We missed that chance, and the value for the home has been allocated. Can we still get the home reappraised? That's Massachusetts, so.
Well, so generally speaking, the appraisal, if you're securing a mortgage, the bank will require an appraisal.
And they're in charge of that, right?
And they are hiring the appraiser
okay.
to independently verify the value of the property.
Right.
And the reason why the bank is concerned about the value is they want to make sure that the equity that they believe exists in the home exists.
So I'm not paying $250,000 for a one-room shack.
Correct. That has a value of $100,000.
Right.
Because if we have a recession, the individual loses their job, they want to make sure they can sell that house for what the individual is paying for.
Which
it today.
Makes sense to me.
Absolutely. And, you know, that was part of the problem with the great housing crisis two decades ago.
Overvaluing?
Overvaluing of the property and overvaluing the borrower's ability to pay for
the
mortgage.
Key, yeah.
Those were two things that created the perfect storm. Now, if you're securing, if you're buying the house with cash, you could include an appraisal contingency in the contract. And in that scenario, you are hiring the appraiser. The appraiser's working for you
yeah.
to independently verify. It sounds like if they've closed on the house, the ability to negotiate that item certainly has passed. Generally, you know, that's how it would work in New York State. once transfer of title happens, you know, the buyer now is the owner, and they can't relitigate or challenge any of these issues.
Without getting you into trouble personally, you know, everybody's different, and I assume that every professional is slightly different, and their eye is a little bit different. Are there some appraisers that you say, oh, this appraiser's on the case, oh, gosh, you know, we're in trouble?
Well, I don't know the appraisers, because I'm not really working very closely with the appraisers at all. There are a lot of them out there. If I'm representing a seller, I make a point to show up for the appraisals. I make sure to give the appraiser comps in case they're not aware of local homes in the neighborhood that have sold recently. But I don't really interact with a lot of appraisers. I don't have much of a relationship with them.
Our guest today is Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. Comps are an interesting thing, and also somewhat subjective. I had to do this once years ago when there was a tax assessment, and I said, what are you guys doing? And it, you know, I went in and fought it, got a little kiss on the cheek and said, all right, we'll reduce it a little bit, but nothing, you know. But comps, I mean, how do you do it, and is there a scientific method to make sure that you're somewhat accurate?
Yeah, there is a science and an art to finding appropriate comps for the house. And, you know, the science is going to be, you know, the location, the beds, the baths, the square footage, and then you can create, you know, price per square foot. So that's the science. But the art is, what are the finishes? What's the layout? What's the yard look like?
Basically, is it a dump?
Is it on a busy road? Does it have a more private lot? Does it have a view, right? All those things don't necessarily appear immediately in the price per square foot.
We're joined today by Alex Monticello. It is Real Estate Today. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll get back to the emails in a bit, but let's go to the phones at this moment, and we'll go to John, who is in Moreau. John, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I had more of an observation than a question, I guess. I've been in the market trying to find a five-bedroom house up in that area for a number of years, something relatively turnkey, and they just aren't available. And even just the housing market in general has been tight for quite a number of years, especially getting something turnkey. And I think a big reason for that is the amount of government we have in the area. I'm within 45 miles, 45 minutes or so of Albany. And just counting the number of hospitals, of schools, institutions, anything like that, healthcare within the greater Glens Falls area up there, and let alone as you get down towards Albany, is immense. And I think that's a huge driver of the cost, of the cost of housing and the tight market, as well as now post-COVID, there still seems to be a lot of people moving up, taking advantage of work from home because return to office hasn't been entirely successful, unfortunately. Mm. And I think it's only, unfortunately, going to get worse because as much as people like to point to New York State for high taxes, and we do have some high taxes, but in comparison to what a lot of other states offer relative to government services, I do think we have a lot to offer, especially when it comes to managing emergencies and everything that goes with that. And now looking at the state of the direction that the federal government is going in, especially with respect to FEMA, I think a lot of these other states are going to have more and more difficulty helping their citizens respond to and recover from emergency.
Interesting.
As is being evidenced in Florida right now with the cost of insurance. This morning, I think, Morning Edition or whatever on this station, the panel that member there said they're up to about $15,000 on average, I think, for it didn't state what size home, but for housing insurance down in Florida. So as there's that retraction, I think Arkansas even got denied for FEMA benefit or for, you know, assistance from the president. recently with the tornadoes that blew through. I think as those events happen more and more, insurance costs going up in other states that aren't able to handle and deal with these things, I think is only going to lead to a tighter market in general in New York as well.
Well, that was the longest statement slash question I think I've ever had on this show, but it was well done, John. All right, what do you say to that, Alex?
Well, I think John must have been listening to our conversation earlier about home insurance and the discrepancies between New York and Florida, and I agree 100% that our affordable home insurance is a contributing factor to why I think our housing market will remain in high demand, especially from people from other states.
John, well done, sir. Good job. 800-348-2551. That's the number. It's Real Estate Today. Well,
we need an insurance agent to call.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. We can do that if you want. You know what? Should do a show on insurance, and then I'd like to get a mortician in here. I think that would be really cool.
Oh, like life insurance.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, yeah.
People would be dying to listen to that show.
Do you remember the call we had about somebody who called about burying their partner in their yard?
Yes, I do remember that.
I still think about that call.
Really? Does it scare you at night?
A little bit.
All right. Matt writes in, I left the real estate business several years ago. I let my license run out to active status because I didn't have time to do it at that point in my life. Now I do. I'm wondering if I have to go through and take the state licensing program all over again, or what I would have to do to refresh my license. It's been within the last 10 years.
I'm not sure. If you're in New York State, my sense is you're going to have to go back through the licensing course. I think it's
is it tough?
I think it's 78 hours. 78-hour course, and then there's a couple exams, a state exam, and then a classroom exam that you have to take. And I know you can do that online or in a classroom. If you did it in a classroom, I think they do it over a two-week period.
Bearing in mind that you, of course, are a successful real estate agent, you have a big company, and you probably, you don't want to encourage more competition. Is it something that people can get the hang of and get their foot in the door, or is there a long, painful process where you're not selling anything?
Well, I think it depends on the individual. I think on average, if you think the average statistic is an agent, a realtor in their first year may only sell two or three homes. Now, that's in part because a significant percentage, I would say probably well over 50% of agents do it on a part-time basis.
Yeah.
And so they're selling one, two, three homes a year, typically amongst their friends or their family. I think it's certainly hard, like anything else, when you're starting a business, it's hard to get traction. And the lag time, right? The time from when you meet somebody today to the time when they eventually buy a house.
And then you get the check.
And get paid, right? Yeah. Can easily be 6 to 9 months. So there are some challenges, but there's no doubt that if you're willing to kind of work hard and you're good at customer service and you're willing to listen, you can excel.
Is it a game for the young? You're still pretty young, and you've been in this for a long time now. Is it a game for the young, or can somebody late in life or in midlife go, okay, I'm in on this
anybody
now?
Anybody can do it. I talk to the agents in my office. I often describe it as we're just really like glorified waiters, right?
Really?
That's all we are.
Expensive waiters,
well,
I might add.
We're working basically for a commission check, but, we're here to help people with a smile on our face, provide good customer service, answer their questions quickly and accurately, clean up dirty dishes or help repair problems that may come up at the table. That's a simplified version of, the theory or the idea of providing good customer service.
Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is our guest today. 800-348-2551. When you represent a buyer, when you represent a seller, how difficult is it at times to be the honest guy who says, well, listen, this is not worth what you think it is, buddy?
Yeah, well, I think I've done a lot of therapy, a lot of work, so I try not to take it personally.
Oh, gosh.
The idea is I think it's really important to be honest and direct with the client, because it's just going to create a more challenging and difficult relationship, and they're gonna wonder why the house isn't selling, or why I said we could sell it at a certain price and why it has not sold.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to be honest and also provide data, right? You can provide comps, as we talked about, of recent homes and that have sold to provide an accurate price. So I think honesty is really important, and you know, sometimes it doesn't work out, right? Sometimes I will lose a listing because another agent will come in and explain that they can sell their house for a higher price.
Now, wait. Once you sign on with somebody, isn't there some sort of an ironclad time that it's you?
Correct. I'm talking about if they're interviewing multiple agents.
I see.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're saying, how hard is it?
Do people do that?
To interview multiple agents.
Yeah,
I think it's a good idea to interview, multiple agents, get three different perspectives and data points. But, one sales tactic is to go in and give them a really high number, right?
Right.
And because if the seller may go for the highest number, I try to provide, accurate data and more realistic expectations as to what can we accomplish.
So when a house is on the market, and I can only speak about here, the greater Capital District, and I'm not speaking about the Massachusetts market at the moment, but how long does a house, a property generally stay on the market? What's the average around here?
You know, the average days on market is around 14 days.
Okay. Which is down from the heart of the pandemic when it was hours, right?
Yeah, I think I think we've seen even tighter, and some houses still are hours. Even in this market, but
when a house is on the market, maybe twice as long as the average, is that a scarlet letter? Does that make both the realtors and the clients run?
Not necessarily. No, I think. There have been scenarios where a house may sit longer because the layout is more unique, right?
Right.
And so, for example, I had a property where the living room was significantly smaller proportionally for that size house. The bedrooms were a good size, but the living room was small.
Right.
And so the living space on the first floor was the big hang-up.
Uh-huh.
For most buyers, based on the way they wanted to live in the house, it just was not workable. So it instead of the house being appropriate for, 1 out of 10, it was 1 out of 30.
Our guest today is Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. Let's go back to the phones here. 800-348-2551. Kate is in South Hadley. Hello, Kate.
Okay. Hello there. Thank you for taking my call. And Alex, you're great.
Thanks.
I do real estate in Massachusetts, and you're right on with all your commentary, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just expounding just a tiny bit on what we were talking about, insurance in other states. So I'm currently involved with an investment property in Colorado Springs. And, I think I'm such a savvy, buyer. But when you're in a completely different market that you are not really totally understanding, there's other things that I think a buyer, before they even jump into let me get the right house, this is in my budget. Not only the insurance, but for instance, in Colorado, if a roof is over 10 years old, your insurance may be a higher premium. And that's because they have hail. There's a very high propensity for hail damage to a roof. And so they look at a roof that's over 10 years old as being already in the danger zone. Hmm. Whereas, of course, here, a 10-year-old roof is no big deal.
Right.
So that's another thing. And then, also, if you replace a roof there, it's got to – insurance companies want you to do one that's, called a H4. It's a somewhat hail. It's not a hail proof, but it's a hail preventative roof. So those costs will escalate too. Mm. Putting in a new roof. So I just wanted to let people know that, there's a lot of homework to be done besides just looking at
Very
insurance
good.
And, the tax base and everything else.
Alex.
So
I think that's a great point. I think, it's a good reminder that it's helpful to have a good realtor and also really understand the local markets.
Kate, thanks a lot for the call. You know, I was thinking about that. When you move to an area, one of the things, and I don't know how you quantify this, how is the town government? Are they willingly developing every parcel? Is that property value going to be diminished from a lifestyle standpoint? I don't think you can put your finger on it unless you live there.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to determine. But what I can say, I mean, that's one of the challenges of our region is there is a limited amount of space to develop,
yeah.
Right? And it is, as you know, in the town that you're in, it's a big controversial issue.
Yeah. Oh, is it? I guess I should probably read the local paper.
I think I've read it. Yeah.
Let's, you'll have to tell me about that during the break, which is right now. It's our guest, Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. 800-348-2551 is the number. VoxPop at WAMC.org is the email. We'll check the email bag in a moment. Christian McBride, Big Band, Shade of the Cedar Tree here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Real Estate Today with Alex Monticello. Renato Lewis taking the day off, and Alex is doing a solo gig. It's been a while since you've done a solo gig.
This is hard. This is hard.
You're all right?
Renato. I'm working through it.
You're doing very well, thank you. Let's go to Steve in let's grab one or two emails. I did say we'd do that, and then we'll go to Steve. Judy in Massachusetts writes, subject heading, three-story townhouse, Washington, D.C. My sister died last June. Sorry, Judy. We put her three-story townhouse with spiral staircase up for sale this March, just before so many employees were let go. Since then, we've had to lower the price twice. Do you see the market getting any better? Well, that's pretty far out of your range.
Yeah, that's a very unique example. Right, the housing prices in Washington D.C. plummeted the first quarter of this year because of the mass layoffs and federal government. So, I think D.C. is an attractive area. I think, they will bounce back eventually. But I think the best thing to do is talk to a local realtor to give you some better.
A little guidance on that. Our number is 800-348-2551. One more email, and then we'll go to Steve in Hinsdale. Sorry, Steve. Chris in Saratoga. Is there a negative impact on value for a home that is adjacent to a house that was recently converted to sole use as a commercial short-term rental? That's a hot-button issue.
So I guess he might be referring to, short-term Airbnb rental.
Yeah, I assume.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Oh, it's commercial. Yeah, so it would be a commercial property for rent.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think what might be a more significant impact is how is the property maintained, right? What's the appearance of the property? That's gonna have a bigger impact rather than if it's a short term rental or a long term homeowner.
All right, let's go back to our phones with Alex Monticello, 800-348-2551. Steve is in Hinsdale. Hello, Steve.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
All right, hey, I have a question. I have a house in Hinsdale, and I own the property next door, and we rented to a elderly family member. But after that, I was thinking of selling it, or should I put it as an Airbnb? I wanted to invest it in maybe another house down in Connecticut.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think it depends a little bit on your financial goals, right? What are you trying to accomplish, and how do you want to use that money?
I didn't know if it was better to just rent it out and then maybe try to buy a house in Connecticut and use that rental as payment for a house in Connecticut, or just sell it and put that money towards a place in Connecticut.
Yeah. I think most financial advisors would say if you can, keep the asset and borrow against it and then use that money to purchase your next property.
So it would make more sense to do that.
That's one way to grow your portfolio. But as the earlier caller talked about, if you're buying a property not in your area and you know, it's really important to be familiar with the Connecticut market. What are the local customs there, right? Are you going to be, if you're buying a property in Connecticut and you're going to rent it out, are you able to get there to service the property? So those would be, I think, more important considerations as well.
And of course, I think, you know, check with your financial advisor too.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Steve. 800-348-2551. Jacqueline writes, how does being in a reverse mortgage affect selling and buying a new property?
Well, we talked a little bit about this. You know, it's going to have a big impact. The reverse mortgage is going to have to be paid off or satisfied, or I guess in some cases paid back, right, before you can sell the property. So it acts as, I think, a lien on the property that needs to be resolved. And there must be some fine print in there that sets out the terms for what happens when you sell the property.
There's always some fine print in everything. Yeah. Let's go to John in Schenectady. John, you're on with Alex Monticello.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
I have
a friend who purchased a residential house. When he purchased the property, it was from a flipper. Strong smell of paint in the house. And they said it would dissipate. It dissipated, and then there was another smell underneath. He's now determined that smell is fuel oil. There's a fuel oil spill in his basement. And if you were his client, my question is, what would you recommend he do? Can he ever sell the property again? He did talk to a lawyer, and the lawyer said that the flipper will just claim that they didn't know it was there, and it'll go nowhere in court.
Annoying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's important that he needs to talk to the attorney. That's the best advice I could give. Did they complete a property condition disclosure statement?
Yes, they did, and they checked that there was no oil spills on the property.
Right. Unfortunately, I don't think I can give, I can't give any legal advice.
No.
And so my best recommendation would be to follow the legal advice of the attorney. To answer your second question, when he goes to sell it, yes, he has actual knowledge of the spill. He needs to disclose that. And the way that's disclosed in New York State is on the New York State Property Condition Disclosure Statement.
Okay. John.
And that statement is no longer optional.
Okay, so you have to do it.
Every homeowner needs to fill that out unless it's an estate or a condominium.
John, good luck to your friend, and thank you for calling. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Del Mar, and it's Barbara's turn. Hello, Barbara.
Hi. I just have a quick question. My eldest son has a great job. He's a teacher at Albany High, makes six figures. He's approved for $350. He cannot buy a house. Every time he goes to make an offer, he gets outbidded by, I mean, 40 to 50,000, even though he's going over the price of the house. For example, there was one in Slingerland that was 270. He offered 330, and he still got outbid.
Zoinks.
And he's very discouraged. He's been trying since August when we relocated from Long Island up here, and he's very frustrated. He doesn't want to be outside of Albany too much because he doesn't want a long commute. Where would you suggest that he look that he can find something that he can afford at, you know, an offering 340?
Yeah, well, I think, unfortunately, even at those price points, there is just an extreme amount of competition, right? So the stats that we were talking about are market-wide, but they're even more severe, and the buyer demand and the seller's market is even stronger. When you're talking about 350 and below, one of the tips or strategies that I have done with clients who are in this situation is look at homes that have been on the market for maybe 14 days or more. Because what can happen sometimes is, I mean, sometimes there's a reason why they're on the market, right? And it's not going to be a house that your son wants to buy. But sometimes it could be that, you know, the paint colors are just a little offensive, or the house was overpriced, and now that they're adjusting the price, 2, 3, 4 weeks later, people have passed over.
Yeah,
a lot of buyers in this market don't look backwards at all. They don't look at the inventory once it's been on the market for a few days. So one tip I would have is ask if their realtor could start focusing on property that's been on the market for 3 weeks. Because you're absolutely right. Anything that comes on the market within, you know, 15 or 20 minutes of Albany that's in decent shape, 350 or below, you know, there could be 10 to 20 buyers for that one house.
Amazing.
It's just insane what goes on. I mean, you know, he gets outbid every time. For example, a house in Buckingham Lake last week was reduced $49,000. It started March, but apparently they lowered the price from $400 to $350 because the roof needs to be replaced. And a lot of people were put off with that. Well, he was even willing to buy that house. He made an offer of $350, which is, well, they were asking, but he got outbid by $20,000 by somebody else, even the house that needs a new roof.
Yeah.
So he's just really discouraged, and I'm trying find a place where he should look.
That is frustrating. Yeah, no, it is a tough market. And, you know, what I also let the buyers know is, I mean, this is also a busy buyer season. So what I will say is there will be a little bit of downtime in July and August. July and August tend to be big vacation months. There can be a little bit of a lull in the spring buying demand. So that can also be a time when people are out vacationing and a house comes on, or maybe it's been passed over.
And they're distracted.
You got to try every angle, Barbara. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, listen, you know what? That's how I roll. Thank you very much, fellas. Appreciate it.
Go ahead, Alex. One more thing.
My final point to Barbara and anybody else who's looking, if you do have the ability to wait, I always tell buyers that one of the best 6 weeks of the year to buy a home generally is Thanksgiving to New Year's. That anybody who's got their house on the market during that period really needs to sell. And for holiday reasons, everybody's distracted. So
interesting.
So that's a great time to find a deal.
Barbara, thanks for the call. Now, on Barbara's basic setup of her question, that her son, every time he bid, 10, 12, tons of people bidding. Are these all locals? I got to say, we saw an influx all up and down the Mid-Hudson Valley, all the way up here and beyond, of people during the pandemic. It's their right to do, got out of the metro area and came up here where it's great. Now, as basically a townie, I can't help but say, to some extent, I'm a little resentful of that. Are all these people, and by the way, it's completely not logical. I get it. People can do whatever they want. But still, you know, it changes the equation. Are most of these people who are outbidding Barbara's son from out, I mean, how many buyers could there possibly be around here?
I would say about a third of the buyers who are looking at homes and competing for homes in this market are not from the area.
Yeah.
So about 30%.
Is that higher than it was pre-pandemic?
It's probably right. It hasn't gone down.
Okay.
Right? So it's probably right around where it was during the pandemic.
All right. So people move, people migrate, do all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Alex Monticello is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the number. VoxPop at WAMC.org is the email. This is from Rick. Please give me your pros and cons about having solar panels and having an in-ground pool. Are these sellers or hindrances?
Oh, in-ground pool is a big selling feature, and I was just meeting with some clients.
It didn't used to be, though, did it?
It did not, but COVID changed that calculation.
So interesting.
Yeah, everybody now wants to stay home and staycations, and so pools are a big selling feature, and we're coming up to the best 3 months to sell a home with a pool are June, July, and August.
Hmm.
I always used to say 50% of the people who are looking for a home don't want a pool, and then of the other 50%, half of them do want a pool, and the other half doesn't realize they want a pool until it's July 10th and it's 100 degrees, and they go to the house, and it's like, oh, I want a pool.
What about the solar panels?
So solar panels, you know, I think the leases are the biggest problem and the biggest hang-up with solar panels is when they are leased. So buying the panels outright can make a much easier transaction. But if you are leasing, you really need to understand what are the lease terms and, you know, how those terms are impacted should you sell the property.
Okay. This email from M, and you're not technically a financial advisor. So if you want to pass on this question, go ahead. The question from M, my husband and I are retired and he's a vet. We have $200,000 in investment in stocks and annuity, but now we're thinking of buying a house for which we'll need $70,000 in down payment. in order to be able to afford the monthly mortgage. Do you think it's wise to pull money out of investments now and put it into a house? It's our first house, and that's from M.
Yeah. So it's a great question. I think it depends on where you think the stock market's going to go, right, and what you're paying in rent. I would also say that if you're a veteran, the VA administration has a fantastic loan called a VA loan. Those loans can be as little as zero down, and there's no personal mortgage insurance on those loans. So I strongly encourage that the writer to look at a VA loan.
That's federal, in other words, if this program, I don't know where this person is.
Federally, anywhere in the United States, they can secure a VA loan as long as they have an honorable discharge.
Okay.
From the U.S. Armed Forces. And that would allow them to purchase the home with a significantly less cash.
Mm.
It's a great product. It's a fantastic product.
All right, let's grab a call or two before we wrap it up here with Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. We'll go to South Hadley, Massachusetts, and it's Rita's turn. Hello, Rita.
Hello, Ray. Thank you. My question is, the seller's realtor is showing us a house. If we want to make a bid on the house, do we need to get a buyer's realtor? And forgive me if you've already talked about this.
No, great question. So the answer is no. You never need an agent to make a bid on a house. Certainly, you could make your own bid. But I think the first question you want to ask is, what is the relationship with that agent when she's selling you the house? If you haven't already had the conversation, it might be worth having the conversation before you meet that agent at the house to understand, are they opening the door as a representative of the seller? Are they opening a door as a dual agent? Do they intend to represent you and the seller at the same time?
And that's legal to do. You can be both.
In New York State, you can represent a buyer and a seller in the same transaction. I don't recommend it. I think it's potentially a lot of pitfalls.
Conflicts,
right?
Of interest and whatnot.
There are inherently going to be conflicts of interest or issues that are going to create some friction in the deal.
You know, Rita, and I'm only speaking for myself, and frankly, my house is no Taj Mahal, so let me tell you something. But, we used a buyer's agent when we were looking for a house, and for us personally, my wife and I, this was the best thing we ever did because there's so much stuff that we didn't know until we had a real estate agent who was acting as our buyer agent.
Thank you. Do you think that would disadvantage us in the eyes of the seller's agent?
That's interesting.
So that they may not encourage the owner to sell to us if we have a buyer's agent?
Ultimately, it shouldn't, right? The seller is going to evaluate their offer based on the terms of the offer, right? And one of the terms could be if you're going to ask the seller to pay for your agent or if you're going to pay for your own agent. Right. But that would be a term.
You could ask the seller to pay for your agent.
So typically, before August of last year.
Now remember, Rita's in Massachusetts.
Right. Nationally.
OK.
Right. And before August of last year, nationally, that was in a lot of cases the seller's agent and the seller were paying for the buyer's agent.
Oh.
Remember, that was decoupled in August of 2024.
Right. Now I remember. Yep.
So, Rita, I would say this. If the agent is an honorable agent, it shouldn't put you at a disservice, right? And I think you can ask that question and see how the agent responds.
Yeah.
It's worth an ask.
All right.
I often tell people it's like poker. Be careful, like keep your poker face on if you do like the house and you're going to be negotiating against the seller's representative.
Well, I hope it's not too much like poker because at the casino I usually lose. But hey, Rita, thank you so much for calling. We're going to leave it there. All right, Alex Monticello, if people want to find you on the internet, I know you're a presence out there and I see you on social media and whatnot. How do they find you?
They can find us at MonticelloNYS.com or Google Alex Monticello, Albany, New York, and you'll find us.
Hey, man, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Ray, for having me.
Support comes from the Hyde Collection Museum in Glens Falls, offering creative classes for adults, including painting, drawing, writing, and more. HydeCollection.org to register. Once again, thanks to Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate for being here today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Ed Rosen, who always seems to be screening calls lately. Man, you got a lot of time on your hands, and you're very helpful. You're one of the greats. No, I was Ed's looking over. He wasn't listening. You know, Ed, I got to say, you've been here a lot, and so thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who's also here, but he's getting paid, so thanks, but, you know, not as much as Ed, who's about... All right, tomorrow it's gardening, and the usual crew of unpaid experts will be here with you tomorrow at 2.